Hi, and welcome to Aging in Place for every stage in life. What if you could visit or have a home that would accommodate anyone at any age, any physical ability, at any time? How cool would that be? That's what we're doing here at Aging in Place. Why me? Because I'm a doctor of psychology, and I specialize in physical spaces and health and wellness. Also, I love designing with intent at any age. Why now? Because we, the baby boomers, want to age in place gracefully, and we want our families around us as much as we can. And why you, the audience? Because we want you to experience what it's like to have a home that's safe, aesthetically pleasing, and that you can live in at any age, with any ability, at any time. I'd like to introduce you now to Aging in Place podcast for every stage in life. Welcome to Aging in Place podcast for any stage in life. We are here today with Carolyn Rosenblatt. Thank you so much for joining us. And I'm really excited. I'm here on the East Coast. You're on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. And we've got a lot to talk about. It doesn't matter what coast you're on right now. I think we are all experiencing something, at least in my lifetime, we've never experienced, and that is the coronavirus. And it was really interesting, and I'm just going to call myself out, if I may, today. I read a fascinating blog on Forbes, and by golly, it was yours, and I'm really impressed. And it was really talking about, as far as preparing, heaven forbid anything happen to our parents. I have a 92-year-old dad who lives with me. Really, how important it is now to make sure that we all know what we're doing, paperwork's all aligned. So what I'd love to do is take this opening segment and chat a little bit about you, Carolyn, about your background, and then move into the next segment and talk about some of the specifics. It's really important.
Okay, sure. I have been in practice in one profession or the other for 50 years. I started out with a dream to be a nurse. I was very influenced by the most wonderful elder in my life, who was my grandmother. She lived to be 93, and I would say lived a very full an exemplary sort of life. So I just kind of liked elders based on that.
There you go. Where did you grow up?
In Southern California.
Did you? Okay.
In the town of Whittier, which is a suburb of Los Angeles.
Okay.
And I was
My kids are in Newberry Park.
There you go.
So, yeah, which is by Thousand Oaks, I think.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. Mount Valley. But the greater Los Angeles area is where I grew up. So my interest in elders took me to nursing. I mm-hmm. didn't necessarily think about geriatrics as an exciting field, but I became a public health nurse, which requires a bachelor's degree and a special certificate. And you've got to know all about families and community health, because it mm-hmm. really is about community health. So I find myself in the midst of this pandemic with that perspective. I spent 10 years taking care of thousands of patients. After nursing homes and hospitals, I worked in the community every day. That means home visits. That means seeing people in all aspects of their lives in the context of family.
And which is interesting.
And like you, seeing who's taking care of our elders, mm-hmm. what situation, what support do they need, how are they going to get by, and for the elder, what it's like to have to be dependent on those when they're used to being independent. So there were a lot of dynamics that were very instructive. And I call those 10,000 patients that I personally dealt with or had my hands on my 10,000 teachers. They informed a lot of my life, and I was very eager to learn from them, and I feel blessed to have had that experience. Back in those days, nursing was not particularly well respected. The first nurses' strike in the United States took place at San Francisco General Hospital, now Zuckerberg, but that strike influenced the change in pay and began to raise the consciousness of what was an all-female profession to organize. There was no union. There were no labor rights. There were no pension plans. There were no salary increases based on anything other than some sort of mishmash of protocols that were developed by the various entities in existence. And I got very disenchanted with the fact that a friend of mine who was a checker at Safeway had a better benefits package than I did, with 5 years of nursing education and a public health certificate. That began to make me angry. Further, my work was dangerous.
Yes.
By myself, going into some of the worst places you could ever imagine, you would never go there, trust me. You would mm-hmm. never go there and put yourself in that kind of risk situation unless that was your job, and it was. but I became annoyed that the profession did not organize itself. I could see it would take years, and I decided to do something about that and to increase my level of independence in my professional life. So I put myself through law school.
Oh, wow.
And I became a lawyer in 1978, and this was the early stages of women in the courtroom. Mm-hmm. You can imagine the shock of going from an all-female profession to a male-dominated profession in which women were not litigators. If we were, we were oddballs.
Right.
But I represented injured people for 27 years.
Oh, did you? Okay.
So the nursing came in handy every single day.
Absolutely.
Many of the lessons I had learned in the practice of nursing informed my legal perspective. And eventually, after a couple of years of working for firms, I went on my own. And I had my own practice here in Marin County, where I live, for 25 years. It thrived. I was the only female, the only nurse, the only Spanish-speaking, the only whatever, the only litigator, whatever, in personal injury. So it was fine to build a practice here. This is an older county. We have a lot of elders. Maybe one in three or one in four people is over 60.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
So I encountered a lot of what, say, people in Florida see, which is elders everywhere you look, many of my clients. When I was done with litigation, because it is combat and we do retire from the battlefield eventually,
okay,
I started a consulting practice hoping to combine the skills of nursing to address healthcare questions people had with the skills of the law, trying to keep people out of the courtroom when there were disputes, particularly in families. That's mediation.
Yeah, makes so much sense. Yes.
Resolution. If they can stop a fight between siblings over mom or dad or grandma, fine. Let me bring my skill in. Mm-hmm. As we say, not disrespectfully, there's somebody off balance in every family.
Love it.
Mm-hmm. In that case, in every family, some people call
exactly.
It. So it's wonderful to have the profession of psychology, something you would appreciate, I think.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I invited my husband, who is a clinical psychologist, to join me and formed agingparents.com, which is a consulting and mediation business. I'm also a writer, and I've done 4 books, one for families, which is called The Family Guide to Aging Parents, and that's available in audio, digital, and print.
Okay.
We have one published by the American Bar Association, working with aging clients, and that is for lawyers and other people in business. And then 2 for the financial services industry, which, to my shock, I discovered they had no education about their aging clients.
Oh,
and
wow.
People are getting older, and they're developing dementia or other impairments. They have no training about what to do. What about the decision-making process? What is safe? What does long-term care really cost? They're advising people with no database. So I wrote 2 books for them and developed 6 online courses to help them get a grasp of what to do in a prudent way if they're ethical about their own aging clients.
Oh, it's amazing. What depth and breadth of information you have. We might have to interview multiple times. Now, you said you do have a blog in Forbes.
Yes, it's called Aging Parents. One of my kids, both my kids are actually in marketing. I've got 2 kids in their 30s.
We love this. Yeah.
And, you know, they're different, but one of them, my son, is involved in Facebook marketing, advertising. He has an agency and does a lot of things. And he said, Mom, you've got to write, and you've got to not write like a lawyer. You've got to write stories and deal with people's emotion. That's what gets them. Because I admit, my first legal writing was very lawyerish.
Sure.
And, you know, it's really factual and it's logical and it tells all this data and nobody gives a damn. So
Henrik would love this.
Tell the stories, Mom. Right. So he said, then put 50 articles out there. So I can write. So okay. I put 50 articles out there. A lot of them evolved from the lawyerish sounding to the stories. And one day the phone rang at my office and it was the executive editor at Forbes.
Oh,
and
wow.
She said, I would like you would you be interested in doing an article? I've seen some of your work. Oh my God, an article for Forbes?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think I might be able to find the time. So right. I did the article and she liked it and then a couple more and that was it. And then one day out of the blue, I get an email that says, would you like a blog? Would I like a blog?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, thank you. So I started writing and have been doing it ever since. And Well, though it's out of kilter with what Forbes is usually about, there are enough boomers reading Forbes as their audience that this apparently is something useful to contribute.
Well, ironically, I told you that my 92-year-old dad lives with me. So your blog was especially pertinent to me, making sure that I know where all my dad's paperwork is and what rights we all have, et cetera, et cetera. The funny part to me, Carolyn, was then my 42-year-old son called me and said, "Mom, well, where is all your paperwork?"
Uh-huh. So he must have read it because that's what I said to do.
Right? Exactly. But it's that sandwich generation. You know, we're kind of on both sides, or at least I'm on both sides of it. It's fascinating. I know when the coronavirus hit and I was listening and I was like, wow, you know, these older people really need to be careful. And then my husband looked at me and goes, "You are the older person."
Right.
We are the older people. Yeah. And I think that's shocking because I just don't feel any different than I did in my 30s. Mm-hmm. And I have to say this, and then we'll go on and talk about law. When I went back and got my doctorate in psych, the literature, I thought it was fascinating for me anyway, because the literature that, and all my data came from nursing.
Sure.
So when you started the profession, it was... maybe not as evidence-based, but I can tell you now it is probably one of the most sought-after careers. And even in psych, it's where we got a lot of our literature.
Sure. Well, we've had countless hours, millions and millions and millions of mm-hmm. hours with the patient. The nurse mm-hmm. spends more time with the patient than any other provider on the healthcare team, including physicians, which is why I didn't want to be a doctor.
Right, I hear you. I hear you. We're going to take a quick break and we're going to come back and we're going to chat a little bit about elder care and the law. Stay with us here on Aging in Place for Any Stage in Life. Hi, I'm Dr. Debbie Lines. Design elements are psychologically and physically supportive and conducive to health and wellness. To learn more about what Lines on Design can do for you, for more information on certified aging in place and facilitative and supportive design, look for us at linesondesign.com. That's L-Y-N-E-S on design.com. We are back here on Aging in Place podcast for Any Stage in Life. Carolyn Rosenblatt is here. Thank you very much for joining us. We're talking really about, as we get old, really knowing our rights, knowing what we should be doing. Actually, I call it really, it's getting our contracts in order so we don't really have to worry about anything, especially the things that maybe aren't warm, fuzzy, and fun to do anyway. I was sharing with you that my son had called me. Well, he's a 42-year-old and he's a physician, and he and his wife are putting together their wills and all of that kind of stuff right now. And I think that's simply because it's the time in this environment to be prepared. You brought up during our break a really interesting subject I'd love to chat about. You were talking about folks who are in the hospital or have parents in the hospital and what their rights really are. Do you mind sharing a little bit about that with us?
I'd be happy to share it with you. I think the question has come up about what rights the family has to see their loved one who is hospitalized. And if they've got COVID-19, don't they have a right to come and see them, especially if they're getting to the end of life or they're dying and everybody mm-hmm. knows it? Maybe they're on a vent. I saw a heart-wrenching interview that really brought tears to my eyes on the news about a physician in New York who was at a hospital. He was a resident there, which means he's still finishing his education in the last mm-hmm. part of the practicum. And he said that a woman who had to be intubated wanted the doctor to call her husband to tell him that she loved him. And the doctor conveyed that message. And the husband wanted the same message conveyed to his critically ill wife that he loved her. And the doctor described what it felt like to be that messenger. And the wife died a few days later.
Mm.
But I was in tears hearing this because I know what it feels like to be the messenger. And it is a privilege, yet a heart-wrenching obligation at the same time.
Well, you know, we talk about the feelings as we get older of isolation and loss of connection. And I can't imagine at the end of life, it's something I hadn't really thought about, at the end of life, what that must feel like to be totally alone.
people seem to know when they're dying. That's been my conclusion. And I remember when my 96-year-old mother-in-law was in the hospital long before this all happened, and I was there with her every day for about a week, right to the end of her life, and before we got her out on hospice and so she could die at home. And she said to me, just out of the blue, I'm sitting there for hours, it's very quiet. She'd sleep off and on. She had pneumonia and some other things.
Right.
And she said, Carolyn, am I dying? And I immediately went and took her hands and looked her in the eye, and I said, Mom, your body is not doing well, but the part of you that's able to receive love is alive and well.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm here for you. And I said, are you afraid? And she said that she was. And then we talked about near-death experiences and what other people had described, what it was like to go to the light and so forth. And I said, it doesn't sound so scary, does it, if you're going to a place of love and comfort and peace and light? And she said, no, that doesn't sound so scary. So that was some of the substance of our conversation. But I think what's so difficult now for people who have an elder with COVID-19 who is in ICU, maybe they don't need to be intubated yet. Maybe they don't need to be on the vent this minute, and they can still talk, because once you're intubated, you can't talk.
Right.
They stick a tube down your throat
right. So that
you can get the air into your lungs from the ventilator, which pumps it in. But it is the lack of connection that families must face. They cannot be there to hold the hand of their loved one as they pass.
Mm.
Or they're getting close, as my mother-in-law was. Carolyn, am I dying? They can't ask or answer, get that question answered by a loved one. And that is heart-wrenching. But it's reality, because we can't risk that person coming into the hospital carrying a virus on their clothing or their shoes or even in their breath that they don't even know is there, and exposing anybody in that hospital who's already at high risk to further risk. Likewise, the person who is dying may be communicating that virus outward, whether they're
correct.
On the ventilator, and they would be exposing their family members, who in turn would go home and expose others. There are valid, solid reasons why we are cutting off the journey.
Someone we're talking about a public health issue is really what you're talking about when it comes to rights. And it's what I hear you say is it's really for the good of the community, good of the hospital.
That right for the health and safety of the community supersedes individual rights.
Okay.
The courts have generally looked at the law that way. Yes, this is a country with a strong impetus for individual rights, the right to self-determination, etc. But when there is an overriding health and safety issue, the government or the courts supersede the individual rights. And in this case, that's what's happening. And this is why it's so heartbreaking for families, whether they have someone in ICU who may be dying, or they just are having a baby, or they've got somebody who had surgery for something, you can't go visit them.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard. It's very difficult for families to accept this, but it is the reality.
Well, it's funny. You're here. You're the nurse and the litigator. You're the attorney. And here, the psychologist and your husband, the psychologist, I'm thinking to myself, wow, that's almost trauma.
Yeah, it's trauma for the healthcare provider. It's trauma
right.
for the family. It's trauma for the guilt that people feel when they can't say goodbye and they didn't say I love you enough or whatever the issues are. Sometimes these things don't come out till somebody's dying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people reconcile or they forgive or they accept whatever it is that's been stopping them from being in communication. This is it. This is the end, and they have a last chance. They're deprived of that unless it is by Skype or telephone.
I was thinking something like that.
And that's what people are resorting to. But you
I can't imagine being a healthcare worker put in that position. That really is tough also for them.
Oh, yes.
When we talk about the law and we talk about getting older, what is who is an elder? I've wondered that because,
it's defined by the law. And
it
started a long time ago, but especially when Medicare came into being, because life expectancy at that time was quite different from what it is now, but it is defined by federal and state law as a person 65 or older.
Okay, so it's the law.
We're elders. You and I are elders.
Okay. Ugh. Hate it when that happens.
People don't like the word, but think about it this way. In history, the elders in the tribal societies from which we evolved were the persons who were honored. They carried family history. They carried wisdom. They carried example. They carried the suggestion of courage, of bravery in the face of difficulty. To me, that's what elder means, and I love it.
Actually, I will recant what I said then, because I wouldn't change places with anyone right now. I like where I am for a lot of those same reasons.
Sure.
Pretty interesting.
You wouldn't want to go back and make those
things. No, I wouldn't. No. And I will say, that lifelong learning, and I'm not like my great grandmother kind of going gracefully. It's challenging, but it's a lot of fun too. Talk to me about basics, law basics. As we get old, what are some things that we absolutely need to have?
Okay, well, there is one thing that might be a handy tool for people, which is on my website at agingparents.com, and it's called the 10-Step Smart Retirees Checklist.
Woohoo!
Okay, and it's what you got to do if you're smart. Mm-hmm. First of all, you have to pick who you want to be in charge if you can't be. And we have to dispense with the fantasy that we're going to be in charge until we breathe our last breath. We might not be. How many people do you know, 85 and up, who don't need any help at all with anything?
Don't know any, actually.
Okay, there you go. Mm-hmm. Me too. So we've got to look at that and say, okay, whether it's 85 or 75 or whatever it is, who do you want to pick? Pick someone responsible, not because you love them the best or they talk the nicest game. Somebody competent. The person who talks the nicest game might have an addiction problem.
Okay.
The person who talks the nicest game might be terrible with money. That's not who you want in charge.
Got it.
Be sort of steely-eyed about this, if you will, and pick a person who is comfortable with money, responsibility, and making decisions. Whether that's a family member or not, it could be a friend, preferably a younger friend.
Got it.
It could be a professional fiduciary that's licensed that you pay. It could be an attorney. It could be anybody that you trust, but it should be somebody that you really can invest this responsibility in.
We're going to take a quick break, Carolyn. And when we come back, can we pick it up where we're talking about an attorney perhaps handling this? And are there attorneys that specialize in elder law and perhaps just know the nuances? So stay with us. We'll be back here on Aging in Place podcast at any stage in life.
For more podcast episodes, links, information, and media inquiries, please visit our website at agingInPlacePodcast.com as we transition through life with the comfort and ease you deserve. Discover how you can create a home that will adapt to you as you journey through life and the changes it will bring. Please follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as our host Debbie Lines and her expert guests discuss relevant topics to creating a home for all decades in life. Don't miss our weekly episodes of Aging in Place podcast for every stage in life.
We are back once again. We are here with Carolyn Rosenblatt. We're talking about, lots of things. But right now we're talking about the law and what the law means for us as we age. And before we took a break, we were talking a bit about how you make the selection of someone who is going to basically have your power of attorney. Is that the right word?
Yes. They would be one of three things, or maybe one person, all of these things. One, if you have a trust, which is like a box around your assets, so your family doesn't have to go to probate after you die, that box we call a trust, and it's a sort of a legal construct, but a trustee is the person who's in charge of it. And if you can't be, then the person after you that you appoint is called your successor trustee. Okay, that's a really important person, because if you lose your marbles, so to speak,
yes,
and you can't handle money anymore, that successor then, under certain circumstances, has the right to step in and take over. That's a very important person, because if you live to be in your 90s, and you can't make decisions anymore, or you forget, or you have impaired cognition, that person controls your money and, in some ways, your life.
So let me ask you a question about that. Mm-hmm. Is there someone who controls my financial picture and also my medical picture? Are they the same? Do you recommend different? There are four kids in my family, and I know my mom and dad were, who do we want to do what? Do we just have someone outside help us do this?
Right. There are different things. The financial part with the trust, the successor trustee is different from the person potentially who is appointed as the power of attorney, the agent on the power of attorney, also called attorney in fact. Ideally, that's the same person. Because if there's a conflict between those two, the trust will supersede the decisions of the power of attorney because the trust controls.
Got it. Okay.
But, you know, sometimes the successor trustee lives in one state and the person who's on the ground making daily decisions and going to the bank for mom and dad is near them, and that person would be different. So the healthcare decisions are a different matter.
Got it.
And in that case, whether it's the same person on the other documents or not, it should be someone who honors your long-standing values.
Such as, what does that look like?
Do you want to be kept alive by artificial means? If you are 99 and you have a heart attack, do you really want to be resuscitated?
Got it.
Or is it time to let go? Would your adult child panic? Oh my God, let's do everything. We don't care what the do not resuscitate order says. Let's save her. This is common. So the person in charge, which also happened in my own family with my husband's parents and with my mother, the person in charge has to be able to say either stop treatment, please doctor, or continue treatment, or let's do this or try that. Do you want to be intubated? Do you want a feeding tube? Do you want IVs? All of these minutia are contained in what we call the healthcare directive, a legal document. It's also called power of attorney for healthcare or healthcare proxy or living will or whatever you call it. They have different names in different states, but they are all similar in that the legislature of every state has allowed people to have that right to decide who's in charge when they can't talk anymore.
Or
they
death with dignity.
Yes, yes, exactly.
It's fascinating because even in my family, when my mom and dad were looking at who was going to control the medical piece of it, you know, it was, ooh, we can't let John do that. If you get a fingernail, he'll say no. Yeah. But we don't want Lori to do it because she won't ever be able to say no. So it really opens up kind of an interesting, and I would imagine a wonderful line of communication that's pretty transparent and authentic in many families.
It can, but there's resistance, very, very common resistance to talking about death and dying. We are a death-phobic culture. It's been said the Americans are the only culture on the face of this earth that thinks death is optional. I mean, look at how we talk about it.
Well, that's true.
In case anything ever happens to me. Like, it's not going to.
Right, God forbid.
We use these, you know, misnomers in case anything, in case I die. So getting real about it, pick somebody who's going to respect what you would want. And there are great tools about this, and they're not well advertised. The American Bar Association has a whole set of tools. It's called the Consumer Tools Toolkit. It's free. And it has questions and quizzes you can give your family about, do they know what you really want? You know, are things worse than death is one of the questions. I gave my kids both the quiz.
Oh, I will so have them by the end of this interview. I'm making these notes, American Bar Association, I'm on, you know. But I think you're exactly right. We don't know what we don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it makes perfect sense. Well, even for me, I'm sitting thinking, I feel like I'm a fairly educated woman, and yet I have a sneaking suspicion there are a lot of things that I don't really have tied up in a nice little Tiffany's box yet.
Yeah, it's difficult because some of these are nuanced. And even with the standard healthcare directive that you can get download free in most places from the internet, you do not need a lawyer. And by the way, lawyers don't get instruction on the advanced healthcare directive in law school. I sometimes provide education for them. What does this mean? You know, it's still very personal and it's subject to interpretation.
And so let me ask you from a professional point of view.
Yes.
Does an elder law attorney, and it was in preparation, I sort of ran through the internet to just see in my area, are there people who specialize in, is it elder law?
Yes.
As opposed to just general law. And I guess what I'm assuming is it's some of those nuances that would make a huge difference, or potentially could make a huge difference.
Yes. If you want to get your trust and will or whatever you have reviewed, go to an elder law attorney and someone who specializes in estate planning. That's what it means.
Okay. Tell me what that means.
It means someone who helps prepare or does all the preparation of your will, your trust, your durable power of attorney, which survives your being mentally competent or not.
Okay.
And your healthcare directive. It's those things. And sometimes, in some cases like California, there's another document called Physician's Orders for Life-Sustaining Treatment, or POLST. There are variations on that in some states. That's getting down to the nitty-gritty when you're deemed to be, you know, within 6 months of the end of life, and it the doctor orders that you can have whatever it is you said you wanted.
Oh, okay. I hear what you're saying.
Yeah. And, you know, there's resistance to following a healthcare directive if there isn't a physician's order, which is why that document came into being. Because sometimes, and I've seen this, you're in the hospital with my own mother. She didn't want any extra anything.
Okay.
She was near the end of her life. She's had several strokes. She couldn't talk. There were a lot of things. And she wanted nothing done to her. And she had a stroke and was in the hospital, and I went to visit her. And she was down in nuclear medicine lab when I got there.
You were like, stress test? For what?
What? Yeah. Nuclear medicine. They were doing all kinds of tests because her calcium level was too high. Well, that can stop your heart. So I'm on the phone with the doctor. I said, could you please explain to me why my mom is in nuclear med? Mm-hmm. And he said, well, you know, her calcium level is too high. And if we don't determine blah, 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 like her heart could stop. And I said, and your point is?
Right. She wants to die with dignity.
I was there when we discussed the, in her competent days, when we discussed the healthcare directive, she doesn't want intervention.
Right.
So there was this long pause, and he said, you know, I agree with you. I said, good, so sign the discharge order and let's get her out of here back home.
Oh, see, this is exactly what I think our listeners really want to hear. It's really fascinating. With only about a minute or two left, what I would love to do is, again, have you share with us how we can contact you. And I really want to talk again about the Family Guide to Aging Parents.
Right. Okay. The book is The Family Guide to Aging Parents. It's available at agingparents.com. You can also get it on Amazon. It covers a lot of different things that we've been talking about, but also how do you get the car keys away when somebody's not a safe driver? What do you do if you've got to have somebody come live with you? Who has the right to make decisions? How much does it cost to pay for all this stuff people need? It's a broad variety. They can reach me directly at carolyn@agingparents.com. There's a phone number. It's not free. We do charge for our services. But for people who are low income, Medicaid recipients, or families who are Medicaid recipients, I will give anybody 15 minutes free.
Oh, that's amazing. I'll tell you what an honor and what a fast interview. I'm just starting to load up on all my questions and I'm almost finished.
Well, we'll have to do it again.
I would really like that. Again, it's such a treat to meet you and listen to all your words of wisdom. And I think we didn't even get to the tip of the iceberg. So thank you, Carolyn. Thank you all for joining us here on Aging in Place podcast for any stage in life. Have a great week. I'd like to introduce you to a friend of mine, Tracy. Tracy is naturally curious and always creative. And when we were doing the Aging in Place podcast, she said, there are so many quick tips that I can think of offhand. My response, who knew? She's going to be with us every week, giving us a quick tip and a hint that is a practical application.
Thanks, Debbie. Make up your mind. Yes, as women, we are the only ones who have the permission to change our minds. But let's not start a debate right now. To make yours and those around you less stressful and put this to use wherever it is necessary. Are you ready for this? Make a decision once so you can stop thinking about it. I know it can be hard for some. I mean, my closest friends start talking about what to have for dinner at breakfast and then again at lunch, and I guarantee you it will change four or five times before dinner time. And this happens every day. Making that decision doesn't have to be about food. It can be who is driving the car today. What am I wearing? Where are we going on our date? I'm going to put this picture frame right here. No, I mean here. No, let's move it over there. Thinking hard on the simple things usually end up in stress, and sometimes if you are making decisions with others, an argument can occur. There goes that date right out the door. So together, as a family, or if you're on your own, make that decision once. Who knew deciding dinner at breakfast can make you look forward to cooking?
Wow, this was a fun interview. We talked today with Carolyn Rosenblatt. She combines both nursing and her law practice into the most fascinating topics. We talked today about aging parents. She's got a book called The Family Guide to Aging Parents, in addition to three more books, a blog in Forbes, and all kinds of amazing information. When it comes to a takeaway, the takeaway is simply this. If I were you, I would research and read the writings of Carolyn Rosenblatt. Have a wonderful week. Thanks for joining us on Aging in Place Podcast for any stage in life.
Aging in Place Podcast is hosted by Debbie Lyons and produced by Henrik de Gior. If you have any comments or questions, send an email to debbie@agingInPlacePodcast.com. We would love to hear from you. If you're interested in advertising or sponsoring this podcast, email us at pr@agingInPlacePodcast.com. Thank you for listening to Aging in Place Podcast.